Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, April 21st, 2016. A lot of very interesting things to talk about tonight. We are 1 month into springtime, March 21st to April 21st, but that's the Julian calendar spring. The real spring is celebrated by the Celts, and which I like to use because the mid point of the year is June 21st, and we say that's the first day of summer. It's really not, because summer begins about a month and a half before then. June 21st is the longest day of the year. So therefore, summer should start like, you know, a month and a half before and end a month and a half after. Anyway, that's according to the Celts, and it's a much more realistic calendar. There's many more realistic calendars than the one we use. But the first announcement, now this, I think you all have to sit down and brace yourselves. If you have a seatbelt on your chair, put it on. A few weeks ago, actually about a month ago, I did a show about Earth Day. The first show I did was back on March 3rd, so that's like really, that's almost 2 months ago. We're pushing 2 months here, a very good month and a half. And there, it was the result of talking to a teacher, and this, the teacher had asked me, because the students at the school where she taught were looking for topics for Earth Day. So this is March 3rd, and so actually we had talked before then. And then what I did is I put up a list, and this link is on my webpage, of about 9 things that they could talk about Earth Day. And so what they ended up doing was making a list of products that you could raise, because the teacher taught organic farming, which is very interesting for high school. And so anyway, they made up a list of all of the things that you could grow and make yourself on an organic farm that you typically would buy at the store. And, you know, everything from clothes to food, of course, to, all the other necessities, I suppose, toothpaste. And they were going to then, on a display for Earth Day, and this was part of a big program where everybody's going to have a booth, and parents were going to come, visitors were going to come, etc. And so they got interested in, of course, water. That's a huge issue. And my wing generator. So they did a big project, some of the students, and to discuss the wing generator and, of course, the water filters, which water is a big issue today. If you talk about Earth Day, water is probably one of the biggest issues. So anyway, the students get all ready. And then last week, the April 14th show, I interviewed that teacher on my radio show, and the students had created a big list of questions regarding the wing generator. So you can listen to that on last week's show. And so the students were preparing for Earth Day. They had demonstrations, little videos made. They had all this stuff ready. And now I wanted that the Earth Day celebration that they had was yesterday. So I want to announce the big results of this. And I think this is why you have to sit down now. You have to sit down, put your seatbelt on. Remember, Earth Day is celebrated worldwide. This is well over, I think, 20 years old, maybe even 30 years old now. Anyway, the results of the student display and study and all the time they put in. I mean, I put a lot of time going back and forth with the emails and contact. I never contacted students directly. It was always through the teacher, but they had a lot of communication back and forth and questions, so I spent a lot of time. But for every hour that I put in, the students put in 20 hours or more, of course. Well, anyway, yesterday at the beginning, or Tuesday at the end of class, which was the night before the big Earth Day celebration, the administration canceled Earth Day. So I mean, I don't even know what to do besides laugh, or I just am like shocked, in absolute shock. I mean, how do you cancel Earth Day? But here's the email I got explaining this. This is from the teacher. It says, "Get prepared for a gross disappointment. The workshop was canceled for no reason. They said there was a glitch in the sign-up process. All students are going to do physical activities like taking a hike or square dancing or going to a local farm or painting water tanks. No thoughtful workshops." I'll let you digest that one on your own. By the way, I will be talking about the importance of water storage tonight. And maybe I'll just do a little expose on that right now before I forget. Sometimes I get off into other topics and then I don't get back to these. Anyway, for a long time, I had an for sale on my sales page an item called the Modular Filtration and Storage System. Now, these were big 6.5-gallon sealable tanks, containers. And they had a twist-on, not a snap-on, but a twist-on sealing cap with a rubber seal. And you got three of the containers plus the filter, which contained, at that time, it was two of the dome filters. And then I actually took it off the web page because I had to reduce the number of things I was selling. And since that was not a big seller, that was one of the things that went. And it was also hard to ship because it was at the extreme limit of UPS shipability. So, but a lot of people bought that, and it was an emergency filter. And here's what the deal is. You could store up to 20 gallons of water, plus you could buy extra tanks in pairs of the 6.5-gallon containers. And I could still sell this, but, I mean, not a lot of people bought it. But I thought, gee, you know, people don't get it. Now, my mini filters, which are the 1 and 2 liter filters on my webpage, which I, excuse me, I still sell the 1 and 2 liter filters, come with two extra containers. And I've had people ask me, well, why do you have extra containers? Well, in a system like this, in an emergency system or a travel system, you don't have a spigot to get the water out of the bottom container. It's too difficult. The spigot gets broken or twisted or pressed in shipping or in your suitcase. You know, it gets scrunched or something. So you, on a travel or emergency water filter, you don't have a spigot. So now you've got the filter on top. You see how the filter canister sits on top, and then the container that collects the water is on the bottom. And so to get the water out, you'd have to constantly be taking off the top, which is full of water, by the way, and then somehow pouring out with the other hand into a glass or other container and then putting the cap on. Now, I field test all of my products extensively. So before they go out to you, I have used them. That was where the pre-filter came from. But anyway, so the 1 and 2 liter filters come with two extra storage containers that are sealable. And so with the three base containers, with the 1 liter, you end up with 1.5 liters of storage capacity. With the 2 liter, you end up with 3 times 2 liters or 6 liters, which is about 1.5 gallons of water storage capability with that filter. And so that's pretty good. That's equivalent to the smaller Traveler stainless steel, which a lot of people buy for travel, by the way. And it folds up into itself, etc. All of these compact down into a very small space for transportation in a briefcase or in a suitcase or carry-on bag or something like that. Anyway, but the importance of a container that is sealable. And now you can go down to your hardware store and you might find those cheap buckets with the snap-on cap, but they're impossible to get off. And once you've taken them off once or twice, they don't fit on good again. The ones I had were a screw on top with a rubber seal. Now, I have been around the world many times. I always take my water filter with me. And I've been in situations where it's dusty, it's dirty, there's real pollution in the air, and sometimes viruses in the dust. And so if you don't have a sealed container, it could be, in a sense, life-threatening. So I want to stress the importance of sealed containers for water storage. So anyway, hopefully I'll have time to come back to that a little bit later. There was a story that came out from England, a group called We the People. And this is a group of citizens that in England have pretty much had it with the royalty, with the court system, with the Crown Court. And if you know about that, the British Admiralty rule law, the Bar Association of judges and lawyers and things like that. But at any rate, a group called We the People, and it's all on video, you can see it. It's pretty graphic and dramatic. Go into the courtroom in mass, and there's a group of people standing outside, and they make a citizen's arrest of the judges. Now, why are they arresting judges? Well, because the judges cannot produce the oath they took to defend the Constitution. Now, the British Constitution is a little bit different, but it's just a way that the court system has gotten around dealing with the real legal system. And so if it's something, if you don't know about this, you should study it. But anyway, they are arresting judges, which was very interesting. And then there's a lot of other cases where they come in and challenge the judge on common law, etc. But I wanted to talk about a particular case that I myself had once. And this is a long time ago when I was younger. So this is decades and decades ago. I had a time when there was these cycles of layoffs in the engineering world, and I was an electrical engineer. Anyway, there was a time when I was unemployed, like many people, struggled for a little bit. But I just want to emphasize that through all of this time, whether it was good times or bad times or whatever, I always maintained my science work. I was always very active in the science community, etc. But anyway, back to the story. So anyway, I had a bounce check. And like I say, this is decades ago. And so I was called into court. And I thought, well, wow, this is pretty heavy-duty, heavy-handed for a bounce check. And, of course, I go into court, and I'm sitting there. And there's all these other people. And it was a cold, wintry day in a northern state. And so we're all sitting there, and I'm looking around, and these are poor people. I'm well-dressed because I always maintained myself, good clothes. But these are poor people sitting all around me with, almost rags on, winter coats that were old and probably had been used for many years, or many of them were from the farm. You could tell they were farmers. But poor people, these are really poor people. And the United States has gone through some epochs of real poverty for the common person, because of unemployment and government programs, and I don't want to go into that. So anyway, I'm the first person to be called out of this whole group, and I have no idea why I was the first person. So I go up, and the judge asks me, "Are you so-and-so? Are you James McCanney?" And I looked at him, and I said, and I want you to listen to this, I said, "I thought debtor's court was eliminated in the Middle Ages," which it was by common law. British worldwide common law eliminated debtor's court. Now, what debtor's court was during the serfdom days, when the serf didn't produce enough food, they became indentured servants. And as a result, it was a form of slavery, legal slavery. So the debtor's court was eliminated and was very brutal. Court system, it was eliminated literally in the Middle Ages. So that's what I said to the judge. I didn't say my name. I didn't say anything. I said, "I thought debtor's court was abolished in the Middle Ages." That's all I said. The judge looked at me. He looked down. He slammed his gavel down. He said, "All cases dismissed." He got up and he ran. He didn't walk. He ran to the side door. Now, this was winter, so he wasn't off to go for a golf game. But I didn't know it at the time, but I hit the nail right on the head. And the people looked around, they looked at me, and they started to cheer and clap, and I'm like, you know, what did I do? Well, unknowingly, what I did is I challenged his right to do what he was doing and demand payment in a debtor's court where people couldn't pay their debts. Simply that. And that had been abolished in the Middle Ages, and these courts continue to run debtor's court, and if they're not challenged, they get away with it. But if you challenge them in court, now this goes into a whole another issue of British Admiralty rule, maritime law, that is running the U.S. court system. And that's what allows the BLM and the other government agencies, the FBI, which are not government agencies, they are actually registered businesses with the Crown Court in England. So this is a very complicated topic. If you're a student or somebody that's even an older person, start to study this, because this is a huge, huge issue today. Okay, so anyway, that's I have a lot of postings on my webpage. I'll leave them up a little bit. You scroll down a little bit on the right-hand side, there's kind of a white column. There's quite a few postings about NASA things. I'm not going to repeat them on my show, just pointing out that go there and read those. And there's one about Bill Nye, the science guy. There's an article that came out and asked him what his opinion was, and they're talking about climate deniers, that they should be in prison like war criminals. Well, the problem is that government-supported science now is becoming politically correct science. So this group of scientists who gets paid, or guys like Bill Nye who get surreptitiously paid under the table because they support government policy, is becoming a point where they want to start arresting people. If you remember in Italy, I reported about, a number of years ago, there were scientists who were government scientists who worked for the Italian government who failed to inform the public about an earthquake that was pending, and they knew it. They knew this, and they did not inform the public. And we have a very similar situation happening right now in the United States with Yellowstone. It's not in the news, but it should be. Old Faithful is going off. You know, Old Faithful used to go off every hour. Now it goes off erratically every couple minutes. Other steam holes have evolved and are just spraying in the through the middle of winter, very obvious. But I have said before, the lake at Yellowstone has to be drained, because if an eruption occurs and that water goes down and hits the magma, that's where the supervolcanoes have happened. The three supervolcanoes that have come historically out of Yellowstone, I have a whole article on this on one of my subpages. The three supervolcanoes that have come historically out of the Yellowstone region came from Yellowstone when it had a lake, literally with water in it. And, of course, the caldera, there have been dozens and dozens of eruptions at Yellowstone that did not result in a super pyroclastic explosion blast. The three times in history, and you can see clouds, the volcanic clouds went all the way to into eastern Nebraska. I visited a museum there of animals. Back in there were dinosaurs and things like that. But that's how far these Wyoming volcanoes blast and get all the way into the central states. And the ash actually carries all the way to the eastern states. So anyway, that's a huge issue. Right now there are 38 active volcanoes erupting in the world, and we had dozens of earthquakes this past week, three of which were major, one in Ecuador and two in Japan, and actually there were other major earthquakes around the world. But I want to talk a little bit about the one in Ecuador. Now, of course, when it happened, I was watching live feed TV when it happened, and the news hit, and they said there was just an earthquake in Ecuador. So a quick, I got online, and because what happens is what you have to do is capture this stuff pronto. As soon as, because the news media goes in and they wipe this stuff off the internet, the disinformation crew is Johnny on the spot to make sure that no videos or other local reporting get out that are not sanctioned, homogenized, and blended by the corrupt news media. And so anyway, of course, I went online, and here is a guy who had taken this from a cell phone in the car, and just seconds before the earthquake in Ecuador, there was a massive meteorite-looking thing coming through the atmosphere. Now, I'm an expert on orbital dynamics. That's one of my specialties. This object was coming in very slow, and it was coming out of an orbital station. In other words, this was a man-made projectile coming into the atmosphere, and you could see it smoking across, and as soon as it hit the ground, that's when the earthquake hit Ecuador. Now, the Ecuador earthquake was surface level. In other words, it was very shallow under the surface. And when you talk about epicenter, it was right on the western hub of Ecuador. If you look at the country, that kind of sticks out the farthest to the west, directly east of the Galapagos Islands. And so anyway, when an earthquake like this happens, they put a star on a map and they say this is where the epicenter was. But the reality is that these are very broad plate movements. But the point is, now, the news, first of all, they went in and they snuffed that video out, and almost as soon as it went up, there was a posting, oh, don't pay any attention to this. And let me just describe what it looked like. It was looking up through the clouds, and it was cloudy at that time in Ecuador. I checked all of the subordinate details. And so this object is coming across the sky, just flaming, and it's got the meteorite tail behind it, but it's big. This is not just a small object, and this is exactly what the Russian meteorite, so-called meteorite, looked like as it came into that town in Russia. It was a couple of years ago, and all of this furor came up about asteroids colliding with Earth, but that was a man-made United States. They're called rods from God is what they're called. It's a small nuclear weapon, and it comes in. It looks like a meteorite. That's what it looks like to the people. So if you go back and you look at those Russian videos, but you can tell it came across the sky almost horizontally, and it came down, and it hit the Earth and then caused a big explosion. So at any rate, that was a rod from God. That's the military term of the U.S. weapon, and Russia knew it. Putin knew that at the time. So he knew that things were going on. And by the way, about a year ago, there was all of this hullabaloo about certain dates in May and June, when supposedly asteroids were supposed to collide with the eastern Pacific Ocean in Venezuela. And so I thought, well, you know, that's a very exacting prediction. And there were all these nutcases on the internet making this prediction. And I said, well, you know, to make that prediction, and they were saying within a couple day window. And I said, well, to make that prediction that it's going to hit Venezuela, I mean, you've got to be down to the, you know, tenth of a second when that baby is coming in. So you need data that normal people wouldn't have, not even the military would have that kind of data, even with their good equipment on Haleakala and their supercomputers and orbital dynamics calculations and everything. Even the military doesn't have that kind of exacting information. So I knew it was all a big hoax. So anyway, I just want to throw that out there, that the Ecuador earthquake and possibly many of the other ones were man-made. But now, subsequent to that, they're coming out and saying, get prepared, United States. There's going to be all kinds of earthquakes across the United States this summer. And these are senators and other people saying this, and some scientists who really, you know, don't have real scientific reason to be saying that. So at any rate, it looks like somebody has got a new bag of tricks coming out, and that is earthquakes, creating earthquakes. And these could be done by planting, drilling down, putting a nuclear bomb, and they don't have to drill right down at the site. They have the ability to drill down in and then tunnel with the drilling equipment that exists today. They can drill down someplace way out in the middle of nowhere and then drill over and plant that bomb right along a fault line or something like that. So that is the next wave of man-made. We talk about climate control and geoengineering and chemtrails and all of this stuff. And that is a very real issue, very much drastically affecting the quality of life, especially in the United States. And also there again, they found out that the lot of the flights that are taking place, and this has been one of my questions because I've studied chemtrails extensively, is where do these planes come from? And what we're finding is they come from England. They're flying out of England bases and coming to the United States, do their spraying, and then they go back. And you say, well, that's an awful long way to fly. Well, yeah, they have refueling in the middle of the ocean, just like back in the Vietnam War era, the B-52 bombers that did carpet bombing of napalm in Vietnam were flying out of North Dakota, you know, from the Strategic Air Command bases in North Dakota. And the pilots would fly all the way to Vietnam, drop their bombs, and then come back. Anyway, I mean, we live in a pretty insane world. There's a group called AccuWeather that's claiming they can predict the weather 90 to 100 days in advance. And they're charging people for this. So if you pay that outfit to do that, I mean, if you got money to burn on that, excuse me. But there are ways to predict weather, but those clowns don't have it. Let me just tell you that. So if anybody wants to pay them, you know, more power to you. But I don't think there's anybody really checking the weather. You know, the weather guy has a hard time predicting the weather tomorrow, let alone, you know, 90 to 180 days out. When I do weather prediction, it is based on a series of solar system conditions where there are electrical alignments, there's many factors, and of course I talk about this in my weather book. And those are individual indications that are very different from the normal weather patterns. Because northern normal weather patterns, we have conditions, you cannot tell 90 or 180 days in advance what the sun is going to do, and that is the main contributor to weather, especially the electrical conditions. So these people are out to lunch. There are reports and ongoing reports. Japan, by the way, has restarted many of its nuclear power plants after the Fukushima issue. They say that it's safe, and the people are very much complaining there, but the people in Japan don't have any voice at all. Over 100 nuclear power plants in the United States are leaking radioactive liquids into the ground. And so we have a big problem. It's going to cost $2 to $5 billion a piece to decommission those 100 plants. And so we're talking about the better part of $1 trillion, folks, to shut down nuclear power plants in the United States, and many of them under extremely dangerous conditions. Now, the problem in Japan is they just had two more big earthquakes. Most of the reactors in Japan are built upon fault lines. So, plus Fukushima is the wastewater, which is coming out from below ground. They had built some walls to contain it from getting into the ocean. The water is getting up above those levels and starting to spill off into the ocean. Well, it's already polluted the Pacific Ocean, and reports that I've gotten directly from the west coast of the United States and the Hawaiian Islands is that there's a lot of dead whales, there's a lot of emaciated whales and other sea life, and the animals are starving to death because it's killed the food chain. though, so the small animals have died off first, which leaves the big animals with nothing to eat. I just want to repeat an announcement. I want to repeat this occasionally. I do not sell anything on Scamazon. Amazon, I call it Scamazon. Most of what's sold on Amazon today are knockoffs. And this is a big problem. I don't sell there. I don't have anything to do with Amazon. I don't want to have anything to do with there. And there are people trying to sell my books as new on Amazon. Nobody has authorization to sell my books new. They're only available on my own webpage. And so, anyway, if you bought something from Amazon, send it back. And they're knockoffs of old editions. They have a lot of errors in them. There's a lot of problems with those. So, and I think, I don't know, but I think Amazon has its own little printing business in selling a lot of books, and who knows, potentially e-books for people who don't even know that they're selling them. And that's the corruption in the publishing industry is enormous. That's why I publish my own books, I control my own books, and I sell them on my own web page. And I know that when you are getting them, you get the real thing. I don't have email lists. I don't have spam lists. I don't do mass emailings, you know, all of that stuff. I live a very conservative life on the internet. But, okay, so anyway, a number of, I've been covering this topic for a long time. I talked about the Exodus, where the Israelites followed followed Moses out of Egypt, and it's well known where they went. They went south, and they crossed the Nile, and they went south, and they on the western side of the they came down the western side of the Red Sea. And so they were about, you know, halfway down when the storm hit and the Pharaoh's armies came and they crossed the Red Sea. And that, of course, was all a result of the comet Venus coming through. Now, standard science always has to jump up and say the Earth did it all by itself. So this clown from it's the National Center for Atmospheric Research, Boulder, Colorado. This yo-yo comes up with this fairy tale that actually what he says is that the Israelites crossed the Nile River at a place where it was relatively shallow, and that if a 63-mile-an-hour wind blew from the east for a certain amount of time, it would allow them to cross, and then in the morning when the wind stopped, the waters receded and covered up Pharaoh's army. Well, that isn't where they crossed. And they didn't cross the Nile River, bozo. They crossed the Red Sea. It's very clear, and we know where they went afterwards, and where they went down to Mount Sinai, and etc. And these were the Israelites, not Jews. By the way, the Jews like to take credit for what the other people did. But the Israelites crossed the Red Sea. And what happened there is very clear. It was when the comet Venus was passing. They remember the pillar of fire and the other plagues and all the other things that I've talked extensively about that are the result. For example, the insects coming up out of the ground was a result of the electric fields. If you want to make things living in the ground come out, you put an electric field in the ground and they all come out. That's just the way it works. You can do that. You don't, in the summertime, go out in your backyard, take a 12-volt battery, and being very careful, take electrodes, wire electrodes from each one, and put a post electric wire down into the ground, maybe a couple feet apart, and watch the worms come out. That's what happens, and all kinds of other bugs and everything else. They don't like that electric field in the ground, and so that drives them out of the ground. That's what happened. That's where the plagues came from. The red water was the sulfur dioxide that came from Jupiter as the comet connected in. And all this is explained, you know. So but if you're going to explain the Moses event, you got to explain all these other things that happened. Don't just pick one of them. And that's one of the problems with standard science. their fairy tale explanations, they come out and say this rinky-dink stupid story, and then it gets published. It shouldn't even get the time of day, but because it came from some yo-yo that works at a government laboratory, then it gets published. But this leads into another more interesting story, and there's a group led by a professor, Gader, or Goder, G-O-D-E-R, I think it's spelled, and they had an expedition to see if they could find the remains of the Pharaoh's army that would have been under the ocean, or the sea, the Red Sea. And they came across this, and now there was an announcement that came out maybe 10 years ago or more that people had found remains of chariots and other equipment, war equipment from that time of the Pharaoh at that time. They found the equipment, you know, like wheels and other things, but there was not a lot of, it was pretty much denied that that was a real find. And now they're saying they're bringing out hundreds of bones and parts of skeletons, chariots, swords, war equipment, and they've actually found kind of what you might call in an excavation find like this, the term is the mother lode. In other words, that's a term that comes from the old gold prospecting days where a miner would follow the gold nuggets up the river. You'd keep panning and going up and up the river, and then at some point you didn't find anymore. Okay, now you look up and you see where the water is coming out of the mountains. You go up into the mountains, and that's where the mother lode is. That's where the big veins are, and that's what those miners were looking for to strike it rich. There's a great story down in Arizona, outside of Phoenix, where a guy, the old Dutchman, it's a tale about how he came into town, and he always had bags of gold, and the people would try and follow him out to see where he was going to, and they could never, he would like disappear. So they couldn't figure out where the old Dutchman was getting his gold. And so there's the tale of the old Dutchman's gold mine out there in southeast of Phoenix, Arizona. So somewhere out there, there is a mine and their mother lode. But anyway, on this story about the Egypt and the Moses story, they're saying they're finding this. I didn't see any pictures. It was announced in the Daily Mail, which is a total British disinformation paper. So, I mean, I'm taking it with a grain of salt. I would hope they're not lying about this and making this up. But you would think that they would be showing pictures of this. But that incident, the Moses incident, was real. I talk about that in my 2-CD set, The Physics of Planet X and Ancient Celestial Disasters. And I talk about all of the plagues and all the other things that went along with that time in history, how it's explained by the approach and the passage of a large comet, which was Venus, which we know was Venus. And that puts a time frame on it also. And then Venus, due to the tail drag, eventually nestled into the orbit we see today. And, of course, standard science denies that. And I talk about that in my work also. You have to understand the politics of science and why standard science has to continue denying these, because if science admitted that comets were not dirty snowballs, it's just one of the most ridiculous theories that ever even hit the pavement. But if they had to admit that Jim McCanney was right, the plasma discharge comet model, then the information about my weather work, the electric conditions outside the planet, and the fact that we can tap into that for our energy needs, and now this goes right into the energy industry, that we don't need to burn oil or nuclear or coal or any of that for energy. We never did. And so that's another story. I'm not going to talk any more about that tonight. But the other thing about this joker from the National Center for Atmospheric Research, Boulder, Colorado, is that was using these magical words, computer simulated. Now, imagine a 63-mile-an-hour wind blowing on the Nile River, it's been populated. There's history of the Nile River going back, 5,000 years. This has never happened before or since, and I guarantee you that that's one of the windier places on the planet. Commonly you have 63-mile-an-hour winds, and so why was it so special that day when Moses just happened to be standing there that the 63-mile-an-hour wind was able to blow the sea apart, or the river, actually, and they were able to cross, and just at the exact time when the soldiers came through, it came back, the water came back. Absolutely absurd. But they didn't observe this. It was computer simulated. It's just amazing these people collect a paycheck. And that's all it is. As long as they can come up with some complete fairy tale science and get it put out there, get their picture in neon lights, then they can do that. It's just fairy tale science. And it always has to be the Earth just jumped up and did this all by itself. And then they got it all wrong. They got it in completely the wrong place. But that doesn't matter as long as they can throw something out there for public consumption. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the topic now of storage of water. And let's look at this on a personal, on a family level, on a community level, on a city level, on a national level, on an international level. Because what's happening is the Environmental Protection Agency, I call it the Environmental Pollution Agency, allows pollution. Now, there's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of companies around the United States and around the world. And, of course, places like China have no standards at all. They just allow vast pollution. Corporations can do whatever they want. An announcement came out this past week about China and the water pollution in China. They say that most of the water in China is unfit for public consumption. That means it's so polluted that if you drink it, you're going to get sick. You're going to get very unhealthy. And let's take an example. I talked about the three-blade wind generator on the interview I did last week with the teacher. I talked about the wing generator, and one of the questions was, what are you going to use for magnets? A great question. Really shows that these students were thinking in preparing for Earth Day. Very good question. What was I going to use for magnets in my wing generator to generate electricity? And the response was that I don't want to use magnets because the good magnets, the niobium magnets, come from rare earth, that it's a mining process that's like strip mining, where they take the land and then they have to, the niobium is very sparsely scattered through this vast region in China. So they have like there are many chemical processes. Many of the things that you use today, like your phone battery, lithium ion batteries, is a horribly, horribly polluting process. And so batteries, lithium-ion batteries, it's not a green industry. So when you think about, say, three-blade wind generators being in a green industry, excuse me, but it's not. When Elon Musk comes out and says he's going to make some really great household batteries out of lithium-ion batteries, look at the pollution that's required to get that lithium out of the ground. And it comes from a number of places around the world. Some of the big deposits in the world, and I won't tell you where they are not mining the lithium at all. They're not. Some of the biggest deposits of lithium in the world are right on the surface. But the countries are protecting them and protecting their environment. They're not just selling at the highest dollar, and they're protecting their environment. And I can guarantee you there's countries like the U.S. that would love to get in there and rape and pillage the land there and destroy it for a profit. But those countries have leaders who are protecting them. So that's a very important point. But back to the concept of the niobium magnets for three-blade wind generators, these areas of Japan are so polluted because when they get done extracting the niobium, and then that has to be mixed chemically with other things to make the rare earth magnets. The pollution is horrendous. And in China, they just go out and they dump this out in a vast area. Well, it's in an area that is a big plain. So the water gets down in the water table. The people there have been complaining for a long time, but nobody pays any attention because in the West, they want those for our green, so-called green alternative energy industry. Solar panels are terribly polluting also, the processes, and not to mention making the big blades themselves, horribly polluting process if you look from the beginning. And they, and the end result is they don't work. They don't produce any electricity. They're out there for a big show. All of that is subsidized. If it weren't for government subsidies, none of that stuff would exist. Solar panels, three-blade wind generators. And that's the thing about my wing generator is I don't need subsidies because it's something that is profitable by itself. So the question was, what was I going to use for magnets? And the answer is, I'm not. I'm going to use basically alternator technology. And what that is you put a current through a set of coils. That's your magnet. And, of course, you lose a little bit of energy doing that. But you have so much power because the wind generators, the wing generators are so powerful that you can afford to lose a little bit and use this technique. You don't have magnets. You use alternator technology. It's very efficient, and that's how you generate electricity. Anyway, that's part of the design. But the issue is that water worldwide is becoming extremely polluted. Now, the issue of storing water, if the typical way of storing water on a large scale is in underground aquifers. And these are natural aquifers like the Oglala Aquifer that runs from Winnipeg all the way down to Texas. It's concentrated mainly in Nebraska and Dakotas, etc. That's where the biggest part is. And it's the result of an ancient freshwater lake that used to, the Oglala Lake, that used to be on top of the water back in ancient history, geological history. But the farmers in the industrial farms, basically not farmers, I should say, I call them what they are. They're industrial farms in Colorado, down to, you know, into Nebraska and down to Texas, Oklahoma, have been tapping off of that Oglala Reservoir, and they've pumped it dry. So, and it's going to take a long time for that to come back. But these underground reservoirs are where most cities get their water, from well water. More and more cities now are getting their water from surface water. And so our containment of water is becoming very polluted. And like I say, the Environmental Pollution Agency allows pollution. And they have minimal acceptable levels of pollution. Well, when you have hundreds of thousands of companies polluting at those minimal allowed levels, that pollution is cumulative. So over 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, that adds up, and then everything that people are pouring down their drains in your house, oh my goodness, it is unbelievable. Then you add in large-scale Monsanto agriculture and glyphosates, which are a carcinogenic, class 2 carcinogen. They're pouring on your food to make it grow. And really, the food does not have any nutrition. All that corn you drive through Nebraska and Kansas and, you know, Indiana and Ohio and Iowa and Minnesota, Wisconsin, those states where you see corn growing, you know, and it looks beautiful in August, and this beautiful corn, there's no food value in there, and it's full of cancer-causing chemicals, glyphosates. They even put it right in the genetics. They put the glyphosate right in the genetics of the corn. I mean, it's grown into there, and then when they bag it up, they put a big stamp on there, not for human consumption. What is that used for? It's used to feed cattle, which is the meat industry, and then, believe me, you get a good dose of it every time you take a bite of a hamburger or a steak or a piece of pork or chicken or whatever you're eating. You're getting a royal dose of that. But storage of water. Now, let's look at a condition where there's, let's say there's a nuclear disaster and you're trying to filter water. If you don't have a place, a proper place to store it that's sealable, because the air can get in, just the air itself could have nuclear fallout in it, and nuclear, you know, and that dust gets every place. If the wind's blowing, or even go down into any part of your basement or your closet where you store things, and after a few months of not really opening it up and doing anything, there's dust there. And so if you have something, if you have casks of water stored and it's filtered and you go to all this trouble to filter water and then you have filtered water and you don't have a place to store it, you've got a big problem. And that's why I never understood why that modular filtration and storage system, that should have been one of my biggest sellers. But people are not aware of the need for storage. That's why with my mini 1 liter and 2 liter water filters, as I said before, come with two extra sealable containers. They have a rubber seal in the snap down top so that you can seal that so dust and other liquids cannot get in. If you're camping and you have one of those water filters, or if you're in an emergency situation, or you're, say, in a hotel, say you're down in the tropics in a hotel, the windows open, the dust blown in, potentially you could have viruses and bacteria riding on that dust, and I guarantee you, you do. That's how a lot of people get sick in the tropics, is because they don't understand that the dust carries bacteria, and, you know, they're very careless. They don't understand how to keep things clean. So if you have your water filter there and no storage containers, so I put them as an integral part of the 1 and 2 liter water filter system, is that what happens, you take the top unit, you put it on the bottom unit, you snap it down, you filter the water. Okay, you remove the top, you unsnap the cover, you move that water container over, put a cover on it, and you move another container in, and you remove the cover from that empty container that's been sealed in your hotel room or in your camp or in your rental place or wherever. Okay, so that has been maintained clean. There's no dust in it. You don't leave it sit there with the cover off. You cover it. Then, okay, now you slide that bottom container in, you put the top part on, filter more water, and then you move it over, put the cover on again, and now you've got two or three containers full of water. With the 1 liter size, you get 1.5 liters of storage, and with the 2 liter size, you get 6 liters of storage. That's a gallon and a half. I'll tell you a little story. I was down in Florida. I was researching the chemtrail problems there. It was about 2 years ago, literally about 2 years ago. I was down in Florida and studying, because Florida has a horrific, horrible chemtrail problem. And I don't know why Florida, but they're just blasting it every day. It's just unbelievable. And I've had people down there that have made measurements of the stuff that falls down, and they actually... after the chemtrail spraying, they have collection basins, and it's full of this stuff, chemical stuff. They're just blasting Florida. But anyway, I was down there researching, and of course, I had my water filter, I had my containers, and that's another great case. If you're getting chemtrailed, your water containers or your dishes and everything you have in your house is going to have a thin layer of that dust at the end of the day. So don't leave your dishes sitting out. Put them in the cupboard, and have storage containers for your water. But like I say, if you went out to buy storage containers for water, you're going to be hard-pressed to find them. And the other day, someone criticized me, and they said, hey, I don't need extra storage containers for raisins, or I forget what they said. These are extremely important part of a filtration system. the storage containers, they're there for a reason. They're not for raisins or storing your matches. But here's, I have used them on travel where I've stored my matches and, you know, like things I want to keep dry. If I'm out in the middle of nowhere and you get a huge downpour and you don't have good protection, your matches and other things, just the humidity can ruin them. So it's nice to have a sealed container to put that stuff in. But then when I get to where I'm going, I have them also in plastic bags. Then I have a nice dry place to keep my things. Okay, then I'm also breaking out the water filter. Now I have my three containers to store the water in. So they have other uses. You can use them for other things. But when you get to where you're going, you want those storage containers. And like I said, these smaller travel filters, or for that big modular filtration and storage system, which I used to sell. By the way, if anybody still wants that, they can email me and get we can send them out again. I just took it off the webpage because nobody was buying it. Well, people were buying it, but very little. And it was a real problem shipping with UPS because it's so big. It's two big boxes that come. But anyway, and by the way, I have those myself. All my products I use myself. I field tested them. That's where the pre-filter came from. The pre-filter came from the 2008 Iowa floods where I was down there studying. That's where the corn project came from. Remember my corn project? That was from the 2008 Iowa flood where I found that last pallet of non-GMO Dent corn that the University of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa professors were growing, and they were getting ready to start on a worldwide scale, and that was all destroyed in that 2008 flood. Gee, a little coincidence there. But anyway, where I realized that you can't take really gross flood water and pour it into your clean water filter because it's going to clog it up, it's going to contaminate it, makes a big mess. So that's where the pre-filter came from. I did that, and I put that package together, got the funnel, got the cap and everything else, put it all together. But anyway, I'm just about out of time here. Storage of water, very important. So on a municipal level, local level, and most importantly for you. And like I say, if somebody wants some of these storage containers from the modular filtration and storage system, or also look at my mini filters, they come with storage containers for a reason, a very, very important reason. They could literally save your life. Because if you become very sick on a trip, believe me, you are incapacitated. You're down for the count. That's the end of your fun. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. 7 letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.